All right, hello and welcome everybody to the Dead Draw Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Etchy. Joining me is Hunter Butler. Hunter, how's it going?
Yo, how's it going, dude?
Coming off that fresh top 16 run at Orlando. Very nice. We'll get into that fresh in just a moment. Jake Gearhart, also joining us. Jake, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I've been very busy with school lately, but my semester's coming to the close soon, so that's nice to have a little bit of a break in a little bit.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then we got Andrew, who might have a similar story to you, honestly.
Yeah, I was pretty busy with school the last couple weeks, but now I feel like I'm getting more time and I'm ready to hit the end of the season hard and try to put up some results.
Awesome. Sounds good. So before we get into what we're going to talk about today, I want to mention that we are doing another giveaway for the, we have the giveaway winner for the 151 Elite Trainer Box. We'll announce the winner at the end of the podcast. So if you were subscribed to the YouTube channel, be sure to make sure you stick around for the end of the podcast so you can see if you won or not. So I guess we're going to be talking about the different results and recaps. There's been three events since the last podcast, all in the same format. We've had Orlando, we had Perth, we had Sao Paulo. They've all been won by Charizard, but there's a lot of things to talk about with all those events. So we'll dig into that in just a little bit. But I think the first thing we want to talk about is the NAIC registration, which we kind of already talked about before we started recording for many minutes. It's a very interesting kind of process that's going on. Basically, they're adding a whole extra layer of registration and hassle that wasn't a thing for any other thing this season. Like, there was a little bit with EUIC where you had to go to another site, but it was super brief and you didn't need a whole account and everything. But yeah, Jake, do you want to explain what's going on with that?
Yeah, so I think from what I gathered, it's just that like Pokemon's taken over the start of the registration, where you just like you have to register on Pokemon's site, yeah, and then pay there, and then once you're done that, you have your slot in the tournament, and then you finish your registration on Arcanine. We're not really sure why they did this. Like, my theory is just that like a year ago, Pokemon saw like people complaining about the Arcanine system, how it wasn't first come, first serve, mm-hmm, and like decided to outsource their own thing to take it over. And Arcanine like sort of beat them to the punch, but Pokemon's just kept going on with this new thing. But we'll see what it actually is soon. I have like no idea what the page is going to look like when we actually put our stuff in, which is not great.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing is why is everyone freaking out? Why is this scary?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that people, and myself included, not that I'm scared of, but just that I'm interested in, is that it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense why there is this extra page, unless it's like some type of, my logical thought process is that it's maybe some type of preventative measure for bots and stuff like that, because I know people also complain about the first come, first serve stuff, might be worried about, oh, well, I don't have a nice enough computer, I don't have the best Wi-Fi, or mm-hmm, I'm at work, or whatever the excuse is for being able to sign up. Personally, to me, it looks like lottery stuff, where it's like everybody is entered into a pool with all the same information. Then when the Arcanine drops, it kind of just spins the wheel and says, do you get in or you don't? I'm not saying that that's how it is. It's just how it seems to me. I just don't know why there's this whole extra step of adding all this information that Arcanine already has, and where Arcanine has kind of like been the, what's the right word, entity of getting into the tournaments, like setting up the tournaments, having the list. I feel like Pokemon has probably relied on Arcanine for a lot. Shout out to them for all the stuff they do, whether you hate them or don't. Without them, they make tournaments better and they make the list thing better, whether you've entered round one without a list before or not. It's a pretty good tool. So yeah, I mean, if it's a lottery, I'm happy with it. If it's not a lottery, I'm happy with it. I think at worst, it's a mild annoyance of having to fill out more stuff. I know there was some errors or whatever. Some people weren't able to do their pre-reg registration or whatever it is, the first page of stuff.
Yeah, and some people were able to that weren't supposed to be able to. I don't know what happened with those, but...
Yeah, I don't know if they let them in. Like, did they just let those people register? Like, why would you take away their registration if they already got one, you know? So, I don't know. Seems to me like... it's all standard and fun. If it's a lottery, I'm cool with it. If it's not, I'm cool with it. I think it's just, you know, a little annoying to fill out more pages of stuff when Arcanine has all that information anyways.
I think Pokemon kind of just wants to take over more of the stuff, to be honest. I feel like there's a chance they try to take over some of the like event organizing too next season for regionals, like just trying to control more of the stuff as the game keeps growing. So I think they might try to do everything on their own website and not use Arcanine even more potentially. I'm not sure. Which, I think like they might just want more control.
You don't want to do everything in one place, you know? I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Sure, sure. Yeah, it's probably a little bit of that, and also just in general, there's more kind of layers for the international championships in general because they have like the Pokemon Center stuff. They have a, like they already handle the Pokemon Center stuff completely off the Arcanine site in general. They are trying to do more of the spectator stuff, I think, in general, off of Arcanine and just having it entirely on their side. So I guess we'll see what happens with that. Hopefully, everyone who wants to go is going to be able to go, but I think there will be too many people for that. So we'll see what happens.
Anybody have a guess on? Everybody want to make some over-unders on guesses of how many people in Masters Division? I'm saying 3.5K. That's my...
We're effectively guessing the cap then, right?
Yeah, we're guessing the cap for Masters. Yeah. I'll say 3.5K Masters.
We're going to have a top... Like, you have to go to day two to top 512. That'd be nuts.
I mean, that was already, like, almost the case at Orlando, right? Like, it was getting...
No,
close.
It was like, a bit over... I think it was, like, 50-50 or something. But okay. I don't think it's going to be 3.5 for Masters. I think it'll be like above three, but not too much above three for Masters.
All right. So over under for you is three.
Yeah.
All right. Hendrick, yeah, sure. What's your guess, bud?
I think it's got to be a little bit over three. Like EUIC was already like basically there, right? Like some people no showed, but before that, I think it was around 3,000. I think it'll be,
EUIC was like total.
I think 3,000. It was 2,800 for total TCG. Yeah.
And then like 400 or 500.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure
because
of
flights. Pokedata over 2,600 who played in Masters, and like there's definitely more people who registered who no showed, so it had to be pretty close to 3,000 cap already. I think they'll make it bigger.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess exactly 3,300. I'm not giving an over under, just 33. Exactly.
33.
I think it'll be a little over 3K. That makes sense to me, and I suspect there will be more than that want to actually go to the event.
Live, at least.
that's so crazy to think about. It's like literally last season I was going to 800 person regionals and stuff, and that's not even a thing that happens anymore. It's just ridiculous how fast this game's growing. So cool. So let's talk about Orlando first. Again, Charizard won everything. Liam Halliburton won Orlando with the same 60 that Jake played, which was 59 of Torrid's list. So obviously a huge innovation and original list, as you mentioned during our tabletop recording, which will come out in a couple days on the DDG YouTube channel. But I think we want to start with Hunter, who bubbled out of top 8 in a very tragic run. So why don't you talk about your run in general?
Yeah, so I played a deck that I was going to play Europe, but I left my Groudon at home, so I had to play Charizard. So was the deck I was going to play once one of my students and testing partners, Bodhi, had been working on a similar variant, basically. We've been playing a similar Lost Box variant. It started with Piper in Dallas playing a Groudon deck, and then pretty much ever since then, I've just played multiple iterations of it. I've played it with Kyogre. I've played it without Kyogre. And then it got to this point in its iteration of like fourth iteration of the deck. And it just basically was a Lost Box deck that was meant to counter the top decks, Chen Pao, Lugia, Charizard, Iron Hands, Turbo. So just like the big meta popular, bigger percentage decks, Tina, Giratina, Lost Box. I wanted to beat, or Bodhi as well, wanted to beat these decks. So Bodhi started out 5-1 at EUIC and then got two really bad matchups and then a brick. And he didn't make day two, so he went from 5-0-1 start to 5-3-1. And then another student of mine actually made day two with it, Ian Harding, and he just had some rough – he hit like three controls day two. So he had like a terrible, terrible run. It's the only matchup my deck doesn't want to – or the deck doesn't want to play against. So it's a deck. Lost Box is a very comfortable deck for me. And day one, I had super favorable matchups. My ties were to a Spothra, which is a really bad matchup. And then the other tie was to a Tina, who was a newer player, who basically like tried to concede to me because he didn't know how turns worked. And so then I explained to him how turns work, and then he ended up getting the tie. So I probably should have just took the concession there, but he's a nice guy, Hunter, letting one slide. And then I got six wins against a couple of Chen Pao's, lost Tina, Iron Hands, and then some Tina mashup like Iron Hands, Raikou deck the last round that I played against. So got pretty good matchups day one, went in at 6-1-2. And then day two, I was just drawing so hot, like unbelievably hot. Like there were three specific games, two of them which were game threes, where I was like, I need to top deck X card. And both times I hit it, one of them was Prime Catcher. So it was like just super low odds that I'm getting a Prime Catcher off. I got Roxanne versus Tina. I'm like, I need Prime Catcher right here, and I only have one Comfy. Whoop, Prime Catcher right off the top of my deck. So got super lucky, but I definitely had to play pretty well. I had to beat John Eng and Grant Shen in what I believe to be like slightly favored to 50-50 matchup versus Chen Pao. Both those games were, or both those sets were pretty back and forth. John's set in particular was probably my best set of the whole weekend. And we kind of have this thing. We've played a lot of big matches. We've played in top four of a regional. We've played top eight in a regional. We've played multiple times throughout the years. And game one, he basically turn two, Prime Catcher Ninja cloned me into Iron Hands the following turn. So I lost that game. And then, Then game two, I turn two, ninja'd him, got rid of both of his Frigibacks. He scooped. And then game three, we had like an all-out war basically until I was able to Roxanne, kill a Beeburl and kill Greninja, kill both the draw guys because I spit into both of them and left his board locked. But that was probably my best game. And then the last round, I was the second seed in the tournament at the time. And I was the highest resistance 35-pointer, which I thought would make me safe to tie at least. I was at table two. I felt like all the other matchups that were going on, I kind of could see what decks they were playing, and it kind of just played out to me like, all right, Luke, he's going to beat his opponent, and then looked like Cal was going to beat Caleb, and I kind of just saw how the tournament was going to go and decided to take my luck tying, and I didn't know what my opponent was playing. Turns out he's playing Ancient Box, which probably would have been a pretty bad time for me, so I think the tie ended up being the best thing I could do, regardless of me bubbling.
Sure.
And then, of course, all that could have gone wrong went wrong. John tied his last round to get money, didn't play it out. And then all of my other opponents lost the round, all four of them, all lost their last round. And that tanked my resistance, which was ridiculous that it even came down to a three-way resistance tie between 8th, 9th, and 10th. The exact same point resistance down to the freaking second decimal point, and then it came down to opponents. So if any of my opponents, shout out to all of them for losing, if any of them would have won, I wouldn't have been the bubble. Only one of you had to win, but you all decided to throw, so I appreciate you. But I mean, honestly, it's not too much I can complain about. Two racks is nice. I got my world's invite. I've gotten a third of my points this year with Groudon, so shout out to him for getting me an invite. Without him, I'd be nothing. It was a good tournament. I feel like if I came in at eighth, I would have dumpstered Luke, probably would have made top four. And then if I would have played, I think I would have had to play the Gardevoir guy, and that's probably where my run would have stopped. So I don't think I was in the greatest position to win unless the Gardevoir guy lost. And if I remember correctly, he did make it into top four. So yeah, I felt like my deck was good into Charizard, good into Lugia, good into Tina, good into Iron Hands, just doesn't do very well into the Ancient Box stuff, either the Roaring Moon or the box style or any type of control. You just get dumpstered by control.
Right. So,
felt like a good call. Feels like a good deck. I feel like people should give it a try, even though it looks like a pile. And I'm really in love with the variants. Probably what I'm going to stick with until new set comes out.
Awesome.
So you are that confident in your Charizard matchup that you think you would have dumpstered him?
Yeah, dumpstered him. I mean, I beat all the Charizards that I beat. I 2-0'd both in day. I didn't play any day two, actually. I played two day one. I dumpstered both of them, but I've dumpstered plenty of Charizards in testing. They just don't have a lot of answers for the Shaman Raikou on whether you take their Pidgeot first or if you spread damage around with Sableye and then take their Charizard, then their Pidgeot. It's not too much they can really do. Even I think the list that would probably give me the most trouble is like if you had Cape and you have Jirachi, maybe I'm a little weary about it. But even then, I feel like I'm not too worried about the setup. The thing about Charizard is now I think a lot of people, including myself, choose first with the Charizard. And sometimes it's like a big debate on whether to choose first or second. But some of these guys who choose first and then have like a really weak setup, my list, because it's turbo-y, just kind of takes apart or picks apart their engine a little bit better using the Cramorant and stuff like that. Where I feel like Tina and these other Lost Box decks, they really don't like spitting and going to five. My deck likes spitting and going to five. So that's like a more of a valuable route for me because I can go spit and then I don't have to do anything. I can basically let you take a prize for one turn, then go after Pidgeot, even if I don't get it the next turn. Most of the time you do, though. You get the Raikou kill on the Pidgeot, and then Shaman just starts dunking on the rest of the stuff. And there's also other weird plays you can do, like spit into Groudon to knock out Charizard, or Prime Catcher up Rotom and knock out Rotom with Groudon. There's a bunch of weird stuff that can happen. It's just a prize hunt matchup. I feel like, especially with a lot of these lists dropping Jirachi and not having a great way to search out the Mist Energy without wasting their Pidgeot for it. They're just not saving themselves from early Sableye or Greninja exposing them or Shaman exposing them. I just have so many attackers in my deck that can take advantage of whatever they have. I have Iron Hands, I have Shaman, I have Raikou, so I can kind of just kind of deal with whatever they have. But yeah, I feel the matchup is at least 5% favored. Maybe I would go as far to say it's 60-40. I think it's a little crazy because I feel like Charizard is just such a good deck. But I will say that I think my list is quite favored, and if I set up, I'm probably gonna win the game.
Their deck is a little bit slower now too, I feel like, with the way lists are built. So if you could kind of threaten to outspeed him and run him out of the game too.
And that's normally if, I mean, like, there's so many routes, but like if you get Greninja off, you pretty much always win. So they have to stop you from getting Greninja, and then they have to Iona you early, right, instead of Arbiting, or else you're just holding a book and then Raikou's gonna come down and take out their Pidgeot, and then once Pidgeot's gone, the deck just kind of folds. I'm still a big Charizard supporter. I think it's the best deck, but I do think if you have a deck, whatever it is, that can take out Pidgeot early, you're pretty favored into the Charizard matchup, which I think my deck can do.
For sure, yeah. You mentioned the Jirachi, and we'll talk about it when we talk about Zard more in depth later, but I think that's a pretty important thing that all the champions lists aren't playing, and makes things even easier for Lost Box in general, which is pretty nice. So I guess we should talk about Jake now too, because you, while your run didn't go great, you hit a lot of Lost Box, you mentioned, but you did play the winning 60. So you talked with Liam about that in preparation for the event. So why don't you go and both explain why y'all made the decision you did with that, and also your run in general?
Yeah, I mean, Liam and I had like talked a lot leading up to the event, and we just thought Tord's deck was insanely good and we should just play it. And the only thing like we were worried about was like more TM Devos in like the mirror. And so Charmeleon is like better against that and just a better card in general than Jirachi. And we thought that like the Tina matchup was Tina matchup was pretty fine without Jirachi. Like, you didn't really need it. Second Charmeleon made up for it a little bit too, because all you really care about is like the Sableye like knocking out all your Charmanders, and if you've got Charmeleons to evolve them up, it's fine. The normal Lost Box matchup is like significantly worse without Jirachi though, but we were like sort of fine taking that loss and teching more for mirror and having a better deck overall. I unfortunately hit the two Lost Boxes and a Tina day one, and the Tina drew perfectly. So, I got a couple losses there. I finished 5-2-2, beat one of the Lost Boxes. But then Liam went on to win the tournament. All credit goes to Tord though for the deck. It's basically just his deck.
Pretty good.
Pretty good deck. And we'll talk about the Sao Paulo list later too. But yeah, so obviously winning two weekends in a row is pretty darn good. Andrew, you went to Orlando, right?
I did not make it to UIC or Orlando.
I thought you talked about it before. Okay.
I figured.
He went to Orlando last year, bro. He doesn't want to ruin the run.
True,
he's just keeping
true.
It at the dub. He doesn't need to come back.
The reigning champion.
Can't lose my title if I don't go.
Exactly. That's the reason why I don't go to Texas anymore. I've already won Texas. I'm not going to win again. I'm not going back. I have not gone back since. Every year that's been there, never gone.
I'm not going back. Okay, cool. So Yeah, I didn't go to Orlando either, so we both have nothing to discuss there. None of us went to Perth, and none of us went to Sao Paulo. So I guess the next point of transition here then is just talking about the decks in general. There's a couple decks that popped up, a couple decks that people thought would go away and then didn't, and have kind of just persisted throughout this entire process. And then some more niche stuff has kind of popped up too. And I kind of want to just touch ground on a lot of these decks, especially ones that we didn't really have a chance to talk about last time. But while we were talking about Zard, there's a bunch to talk about with Zard because there's multiple different builds now. There's so many tech options that are really interesting to think through and talk about. You can play Control Zard, you can play Torrid Zard, you can play something more in line with Pedro's list as well, the winning Sao Paulo list. And then we have to discuss, too, your ace spec of choice. So I guess the big... Actually, I think I want to start with the ace spec because I think that kind of guides a lot of the other discussion. But we saw Prime Catcher and Cape both win regionals over the last month. We did not see Max Belt do anything really outside of that. So yeah, so I think most people are out on that. But even like everyone is really in on Max Belt first, and then as time goes on, people realize it. But the Cape is probably the most noteworthy thing from Pedro's list. Do we expect Cape to be more prominent kind of going forward, especially after, you know, winning a regional like that? And how scary is it?
And I think Cape is like just a very good card in general. Though I'll say one thing on the Max Belt first, though. Like I think the reason why like Max Belt has kind of dropped off is like it's actually like pretty useless against the Torrid Zard deck with the Bibarel.
Yeah.
Because like one of the main strategies, so one of the things that the Max Belt fix is that you win if it's 2-2, you Max Belt kill their Charizard and win. But Torrid Zard deck is built to go to a full one prize board on two prizes. So Max Belt's just a useless card in that situation. Like you'll never find the opponent, as long as they know you're playing the Max Belt, you'll never find an opponent with two prizes in play in that situation. And it, yeah, with the Bibarel, like you're able to draw out of like any hand disruption. So yeah, you kind of just checkmate with Radiant Charizard active, Bibarel on the bench. You can Bibarel, if they kill your Radiant Zard, you Bibarel and draw Charizard and win. And if they kill the Bibarel, you can Radiant Zard them for game.
You're saying but when they're left at two, or when they've taken when you
when take when they're them? When they're left at two, when both players are left at two, like Max Belt wins there. But if there's a two prizer in play, but Torrid Zard deck is like pretty built to take all the two prizers out of play. So if you know your opponent's playing Max Belt, it's not that much of a like it doesn't change that much. You can basically play around that never getting into that position where both players are at two and you have a two prizer in play. The Prime Catcher I think is like the best overall ace spec. Like it's pretty good in mirror, just being able to have extra gust effects, especially at the end of the game, is useful. And even at the start, just applying more pressure, and against like Tina, it's definitely better there. But the Hero's Cape has a lot going for it. Like it's better into Ancient Box, it can be better into Tina if you're also playing the Mist Energy. And then a lot better into Chen Pao than Prime Catcher. So that's like another matchup where the Max Belt's good against is Chen Pao. So you can one-shot the Chen Pao when neither player have taken any prize cards, but the Hero's Cape can sort of work in a similar way where you're going first. You just evolve Rare Candy Charizard, attach Hero's Cape, and the chance that your opponent hits eight energies, considering that one can be prized, and it's like 60% that they prize one, is like, yeah, they're not going to hit it. So you sort of win from that spot, which is good. But yeah, it's something to consider. But I also have seen a lot more Chen Pao lists playing Lost Vacuum now, so it's not as good there.
Yeah, I was a hater of the Max Belt. Even our first podcast that we did where we were talking about ace specs, and Brayden was kind of like, you're crazy for not thinking about playing Max Belt. And I was playing Prime Catcher, and of course, lo and behold, the UIC Prime Catcher wins, so I was right anyways. But I got coped into playing Max Belt because Bodhi was basically screaming down my ear like, you're not going to be able to kill Pidgeot when your opponent has taken two prizes and your Pidgeot's going to die. So you might as well play it, or else they're just going to take out your Pidgeot. So, of course, I played it, and I only played against Charizard Bibarels at UIC. I never saw a Zard Pidgey. So it sat in my deck the whole tournament. It was a vitality band at best. Really big fan of the Prime Catcher. I think just having another way to combo a Gust with Iono when you're not behind is just so good. Just being able to just go change your hand, kill what I want to kill, or get from odd prizes when you've taken that first single prize, getting back on even prizes quicker. I think that's a nice thing to be able to have, to not be forced into playing boss when you could use per se. If you have an Arvin or a Prime Catcher in your hand, either or, and then you have Pidgeot, you can grab the other piece and kind of continue to set up, get Charmeleon, stuff like that. Big fan of the cape. Jake basically mentioned like all the big plays besides Living Iron Leaves, I think is the only one you kind of missed. And that's another cool one, is you can kind of slap it down against Tina. If you have the Mist Energy and the cape, you die to pretty much nothing. I'm pretty sure you die to nothing. So that's nice. I'm enjoying Prime Catcher still. I just think it's just such a powerful card. But I think cape is one of those cards where when you're in day two of a big tournament, or even day one, and you're playing those Charizard mirrors, and your opponent has to find out game one what you're playing, and if you play a certain game plan to where you wait till the vacuum's gone, or they end up expending their vacuum thinking that they don't need it, and Hero's cape comes down, then it just becomes like a game-changing thing. So I could see either thinking Max Belt is terrible, sell it while you can, and I think the other two are just better.
Yeah, Max Belt actually, or Hero's Cape also helps in sort of those like the Torzard mirror end games a little bit, because you can put it on Radiant Charizard, and then their Radiant Charizard can't kill your Radiant Charizard, which can be kind of annoying for them, because they have to find an extra piece. The Torzard mirror is so crazy. But yeah, it can help a little bit. The Prime Catcher is definitely more useful, I'd say, but the Hero's Cape can definitely come up.
The Cape Radzard thing is really interesting. I've had that come up when I've played against Charizard before, too. They, like, cape their Radzard. It's pretty annoying. Control also does that sometimes. It, like, the 262 one-prizer that can just one-shot stuff is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty ridiculous.
For sure. Since you mentioned Control, there's multiple flavors now of Zard. Obviously, like, more in lines with Torrid's list, more in lines with Pedro's list, with the Mist and the Hero's Cape. And people are also doing Control Zard-type stuff. How should people kind of decide what flavor of Zard they should bring to Indianapolis here?
I think you need to be asking yourself what you're teching for, because a lot of these slots that we're talking about are kind of teching for specific things, or if you're just generally trying to have a bunch of options. I think if you want a general or a deck that just generally gives you a lot of options, I think you go with Torrid's list, where it just gives you the deny prize routes. If you want to stick the second Charmeleon in there for the Devos, you have that. I also think the two Charmeleon fits better with the two Turo, because you can kind of loop Charizards. I think that ends up working out a little bit better. So I think if you want general options, you go for Torrid's lists. And then when you start going to specific things, like we'll talk about like Gabe and them's list for EUIC with the Regieleki, they're using those cards specifically in the matchup versus the Blocklax and versus looping the Eerie versus Tina and stuff. So you want to be, if you want the general list, you go for there. And if you want to go for specific matchups that you think will be highly played, like you think there's going to be, I don't know, 15% Tina in a tournament, then I think you consider talking about cards like Mist, Jirachi, Eerie, stuff like that, because I don't think Eerie is universally should be stuck in your deck. It's definitely a tech slot that can be changed. But I will say I'll be the one Torrid hater probably, because you guys like Torrid's lists. And I will probably be leaning more towards Pedro's E-list. I've been messing around with the Cape and the Prime Catcher, so kind of switching on that slot. But I've been playing Mist for a little bit, and I've been playing the Turo and the Eerie, and the I've been messing around with the second Devo. So I've been messing around with a lot of stuff. So I think I'm a little more closer on the techier list than I am on the have a bunch of solid options lists, which I think also might be overprepared for at this point. But all that being said, I think Torrid made a really good deck. I just think now that it's winning everything, the hate has to be coming. It has to be at this point. Like, grass decks need to start showing up. Whatever needs to happen, I think is going to start happening for Charizard not to win.
Yeah, I think the Charizard lists are like, honestly, getting too teched out for me. Like, I'm kind of getting pushed away from Charizard because of how like mirror teched they are now. Like with with Pedro's list that won Sao Paulo. Two TM Devos. There's only two Ionos in this list, like no Jirachi, one Turo. So you're conceding to Lost Box, you're conceding to Control, double Devo for Mirror. I guess you're fine against Tina because you got the Mist plus Cape, which is pretty good. One Charmeleon. Like this list is like, I think it's very inconsistent. Eerie too, it's like, this deck has no draw supporters and like a ton of cards you can just open in your starting hand and they're useless against like half the matchups. You're going to beat every mirror you hit. So I don't think I would play a list this teched out. So if I get to the point where I expect other people to playing this, then I'm definitely going to have to switch off of Charizard and probably play Tina with like Lost Vacuum and Temple or some Lost Box deck. Which has answers. I think this is like, yeah, we're getting to the point where there's too many mirror techs in the list to the point where it gets like, yeah, inconsistent, which I'm not a huge fan of.
The two boss, two Iono, no supporter recovery, no prime catcher seems so crazy. Like it seems like that seems so limited to me in like in terms of those options. I don't know.
I wouldn't play a list without if I'm playing two boss, I'd be playing Palpad, and if I'm not playing Palpad, I would be playing two boss, two catcher, and prime catcher. I'd have to have four to five gusts, I feel like, is like minimum.
Yeah, it definitely takes like more polarized. Yeah,
it's very interesting. It seems like there's so much stuff missing from Pedro's list. I guess he just wanted to fit in so many different techs, but it worked out for him.
It worked out for him. Yeah.
It seems like
that's.
Go ahead,
Andrew.
You're good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, it seems like Pedro kind of just thought that, you know, he tests with William and a lot of the top Brazilian players. I'm sure he just expected to be playing a lot of Charizard mirror and thought that once he gets to a winning record that he'll basically just be playing against Charizard. So I don't mind a strategy like this. It's not something I would go for, but I feel like there is merit to just being like, well, Charizard's the best deck. I know the best players in my country. I've been liking Charizard and playing specific Charizard lists. I'm just going to play something that will beat the mirror and do okay versus everything else.
I feel like it almost stops being the best deck when you have this few consistency cards. Like I think what makes Charizard so good is that you turn to Candy Pidgeot, Candy Charizard, and then your board is like unbeatable for most decks. And like the entire format is just trying to disable your Pidgeot and your Bibarel and whatnot. But this deck, like, I don't know. I just feel like it shouldn't set up enough. I guess you're also like probably pretty great against Chen Pao with the Eerie double Devo and the Cape. So maybe he's like, yeah, teching for that matchup even more, which I don't mind. So like, I guess I'm coming around on the list a little bit more, but yeah.
My own is crazy though, personally. Yeah, like, for me personally.
Yeah, like I'd cut the. I don't know. You need the Roxanne though, because you like draw power. Like I want to play. I don't know that. I think if I decided that this was the best way to play Charizard for Indy, then I probably would not be playing Charizard. I'll just play something that beats this list.
Yeah.
He did beat a Lost Box in finals, which seems kind of interesting, but.
Eerie and Cape are really good in Lost Box. I mean,
and Miss Energy against that specific build too is also really good. Because they're just not killing your Zards at right time. It was like the ideal matchup for you to hit with that deck. The ideal Lost Box matchup for you to hit if you're that Zard, you know.
Yeah, I feel like especially like the Moon Lost Boxes and Tina both are affected by Mist, which is something that my list isn't affected by because Shaman doesn't give a crap about Mist.
Yeah.
I just blow you up. But the Eerie, I'm fortunate enough that because I'm putting so much pressure on my opponent, it's harder to Eerie me when you're leaving me with, even if I have a book and you Eerie me, I've hopefully taken enough prizes and not leaving, not like going too deep in my deck, knowing when to stop gaining card advantage, like not Greninja-ing every turn just so I can have whatever I want to get Eerie'd. But yeah, Eerie is really, really tough for all Lost decks to deal with, even if it's just like blind early game. I think I watched one of, it was either Pedro or Alex Silva's games where he just blind eerie, like didn't have much going on. It was just like, screw it. I'm just going to, I have Arvin in my hand, but I'm just going to eerie anyways. And ended up hitting double super odd, which was pretty huge in the game. I don't think he ended up winning the game, but it was pretty hard for, I think this was his top four versus Nicholas. It was pretty hard for him to come to the cards to be able to finish out the game. So yeah, Erie is something you should be worried about if you're playing Lost Box at any of these upcoming tournaments.
That's like the main thing that keeps me from wanting to play Lost Box or Giratina is the fact that like you're getting rid of cards the entire game. You're basically only keeping the bare minimum to be able to close out the game. And then that feels like it's very weak if your opponent can just look at your hand and just get rid of two cards.
Yeah, it's scary.
It seems very
now scary. The nice thing about it, I will say, is that like I mentioned, if you're keeping pressure on your opponent, like specifically against Charizard with the Eerie, I don't know any other deck besides Control that can spam Eerie, and you're losing to that no matter what because they can spam it. Decks like Charizard that can't spam it, they basically are at a point where, okay, if I've killed their Pidgeot, like, are you going to rebuild your board, or are you going to just try to Eerie me and pray that your Czar lives? Situations like this. But yeah, I think there are certain things you could do to play around, like I said, like not Greninja-ing on certain turns where you're like, I already have the stuff I need for this turn. I don't need to like go too deeper into my deck, or like turns where you're just chorusing for card advantage and you're not needing to go to 10. You can just leave yourself at 7 and kind of just go, well, I don't need too much going on. Those kind of things you can do, but generally, they're not the best because you kind of want to have a big hand. There are things you can do.
You can preemptively gate. If you have a good handle on your opponent's list and what they can do, you can kind of expect when they would Eerie if they can, especially when they have Pidgeot up. If they do or don't have it up, that influences a lot. The way I got around Eerie at UIC, I hit an Arc player who did the turn 2 blind Eerie into 2 gates, and I was like, awesome. But I played Crisis Punch, so that fixed any kind of resource management issues towards the end of the game. So there's ways to get around it for sure. It is the worst part, I think, of playing Lost Box, honestly, is having to deal with Eerie. But speaking of Lost Box,
I think like Eerie is a lot weaker against Tina in specifically because it's really easy to preemptively gate to things. Yeah. Like you don't, your Tina's, like if you have like 2 Tina's in play, like only one is threatened and you're going to be like removing energy off both. So you don't really need like multiple gates in a row, but also Iron Leaves is like super big for just like gating to your comfies. And then the energies are just in play, which you can use for Iron Leaves. So like you can even play like 3 gates back to back to just get a bunch of random energies in play. And then like Iron Leaves 2 turns in a row. And you just need like a super rod to do that. So yeah, it's a lot more resilient than the normal Lost Box lists.
Yeah, I think the Eerie is only scary versus Tina for ripping away rods. I think that's the thing that's scary for Tina, is that they're preparing for a knockout on a Tina or Iron Leaves or something, and then they Eerie you, rip away your rods, and then kill you. That's what you're worried about. And then the other Lost Box decks, they're worried about getting their gates ripped away because that's the only way they're powering up these big attacks. The rods getting discarded are just so huge.
Sure.
Yeah, that's why I'm like a pretty big fan of Triple Rod and Tina, because like in a lot of your matchups, it lets you play like way more aggressively with your energy cards, which can be like important, like against Ancient Box or Chen Pao. You just have to like Lost Zone stuff all the time. You can't afford to be like Abyss Seeking. So you can play more aggressively against those, and then against Zard, where you have more time, you've just got Triple Rod, so you have more insurance against Eerie.
Yep.
Bro, I like that. Three Rod last format, bro. Three Rod broken in Tina. It gives you so much more flexibility. I, for sure, with Eerie, I would not play less than Three Rod.
Yeah, it's fair. So the last thing I want to mention with Lost Box then is there any reason someone should not play your list, Hunter, or that kind of build? Should they play a different build, or is your build like still perfect for this kind of meta?
I think mine's still good for the meta. I do think it's a little reckless in the way that we have it structured right now. There are ways to make it less reckless because I'm only playing 1 Grass, 1 Psychic, 1 Sableye, 1 Shaman. Obviously, I wouldn't play 2 Shaman, but maybe I would consider playing a 2nd Grass. Because there are some things that can happen, like day 2, my first round, my first flower selecting blind without knowing my deck, was Psychic Sableye. I get rid of the Sableye, I take the Psychic. Then my next flyer selecting was Cram Colress, and my hand was dead. I needed Colress. So I'm like, well, two of my attackers were Chen Power gone, and I guess it's going to be a hands Groudon game. That's the only thing I can attack with. Or hands Groudon Shaman. I end up winning that game, no problem. I like Greninja'd, and then Greninja'd into hands into Groudon or something, some line of that. I just think that my list has so many options in prize maps. And I think it's just, I think the thing that makes my list better than the other ones is they're less turbo-y, like the Artisan list with like the moon and such. They're playing all these different energy types, but they're not playing a turbo list. And most of them don't even have more than one vacuum. So my list is just going to 7 and going to 10 much quicker than any other list. So I think that's like the biggest thing that makes my list different is that I'm going to get my Lost Zone bigger than the other Lost Zone decks much quicker. And I have been messing around with a even turbo-ier version with 3 water and cutting the Iron Hands from Mew EX and going up to 3 vacuum and just kind of going like old turbo style where I just want to go second and go to 7 Greninja you. So I'm working with that as well. But I do think Groudon is extremely strong. And I think Iron Hands is strong and Shaman and Raikou. I just feel like all the attackers work together and they weirdly get value in pretty much every matchup, which is the crazy part.
Yeah, sounds like a strong argument to consider it for Indianapolis. Next deck to talk about then is Ancient Box, another box deck that got 2nd at Orlando. It's a deck that a lot of people are pretty down on in general, especially after like EUIC and stuff. People were saying, oh, it doesn't beat Charizard, this, that. It's not that good of a deck. And then it gets 2nd at Orlando. I don't think it got top 8 at the other tournaments. Let me double check that. No. Moon to Dunsparce did, but not Ancient Box. But it seems like it's a deck that's probably going to pick up in popularity compared to Orlando at Indianapolis, just based on it doing well and also other people starting to pick it up and play it. What are everyone's thoughts on Ancient Box?
I mean, I think the deck's a bit like linear and it doesn't really beat Charizard, especially with Hero's Cape and Charizard.
With Hero's Cape, it's terrifying. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you've got like pretty good matchups against like Chen Pao and the Lost Zone stuff, like Tina, and a good control matchup, which is nice. But if you're not really beating Charizard, which I think is gonna like keep going up in popularity, like 25%. It's a bit scary to go into a room of 25% Charizard with a deck which like you have to high roll to beat Charizard.
Yeah, and I guess if there's not a lot of losses and stuff too, if the numbers for that aren't going up, then it's harder to justify as well. Just like the matchups you take positive, if they're not in high enough numbers, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Ancient Box. Whenever I play against them, it feels like it's very easy to like exploit different problems with their deck as well. Like, they have lots of different issues with their deck where they have to get Stadas off. Their resources a lot of times end up getting really low at the end of the game. Either they like get low on attackers on board, they get low on supporters, they have a bunch of energy in the discard pile. I don't know. To me, it seems like usually they end up missing something. They can't pull together the game, and even if you were behind, you have a decent chance to come back, especially if you're playing like a deck like Charizard, where it's very hard for them to take the big one shots at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not high up on the deck. I will give some advice to those who are playing it. I feel like if you want to have a chance against doing well in a Charizard, you need to be playing like Kabalion or multiple copies of Kabalion to be able to actually hit the number that you're supposed to hit. I think Lost Vacuum is like a really annoying card for the deck to deal with. I think we've seen in that final matchup where Liam like Lost Vacuumed a tool, and then that was the one tool that he needed 10 damage for to be able to knock out the Charizard. So like having ways to just go after Greninja, not put more ancient cards in the discard pile, remove their tools so they're not as big HP, specifically in the Charizard matchup. So I think if you want your deck to beat Charizard, you need to be playing like or trying out Kabalion, or maybe even two copies of Kabalion to be able to ramp up and hit the numbers that you need. But I'm not super high up on the deck. Although I will say, I think a decent formula into this format right now is either I don't think anything takes super higher than a 55-45 versus Charizard. I think 5% is like the most I can really give to any deck besides like control versus Charizard. And even then, based on list. It's closer. But I think a decent formula for this format is, like, if you just want to beat stuff around Charizard and say, you know what, I'm not going to have that great of a Charizard matchup, but I'm going to beat all the decks that want to beat Charizard, which I feel like Ancient Box and Roaring Moon are kind of in that position of doing well into Chen Pao, doing well into Lugia, doing well into Lost Box, doing well into the Iron Hands deck. Like, they just do really well into those decks, but doesn't do too well in a Charizard. And I think that's an okay formula to have, because there was similar formulas in the Lugia format where it was like, all right, well, I'm not going to beat Lugia, but I'm going to beat everything around Lugia, so I'm cool with that. So I think that's an okay formula into this format, and if you want to go for that, that's fine. But I don't think you're beating Charizard without adding some Cobalions, or even trying, as much as I hate Max Spell, even trying like Max Spell to be able to actually get to the numbers that you need to get to.
I feel like taking like a poor Charizard matchup, but like if the Charizard player isn't great, it's a fine matchup, is like a fine thing to do. But I think even against Charizard players who don't play great, Ancient Box is still kind of sketch. It can still be hard to hit the knockouts. The Charizard's going to attack every turn. They can play the Ionos. It's not super hard for Charizard to play that matchup. So that's pretty sketch of an idea to do. But
as far as decks that probably without heavily changing how they're being played right now to beat Charizard, Ancient Box is kind of in that slot where it's like, you really have to change the deck if you want to beat Charizard, you know? So I personally haven't put the time into it. I have thought about Cabalion and I've thought about Max Spell, but that's about as far as I've gone with the deck. I'm just not big on eight energy in a deck that wants energy attachments and Sadas. And it just feels like it needs more room. It feels like it needs 63 cards in my mind for the deck to work.
Yeah, the next deck to talk about is a deck that Jake has gone from lovers to enemies with, Gardevoir. Got top 8 both at Orlando. Did it get top 8 at Perth? No, not at Perth, but it did get top 8 at Sao Paulo as well. It's a deck that a lot of people were saying, oh, it doesn't even beat Charizard, so you shouldn't play it. It's kind of the same arguments with Ancient Box that people were making with it, but Josh seems to think it's still totally fine into Charizard, at least good enough, and has great matchups across the board in other places. So, Jake, what's going on with Gardevoir? Why is it seeing all the success still?
I think it's only seeing success because nobody knows how to play against it. It's kind of one of those decks where you have to like think about the matchup and how you're going to approach it with most decks in the format. And once you do, you just beat them like every time. I think Gardevoir, the Charizard matchup is pretty terrible if they play like two boss Prime Catcher and Yell's Cheer or something like those five gust effects, like you have no way to win because your whole strategy against Charizard is just to put Mimikyu active and hope your opponent doesn't like destroy you. And usually it works out if your opponent doesn't know what they're doing, and like attacking with Charmeleon into it is really bad if you're not one-shotting the Mimikyu. But if you can just gust around every turn, then the Gardevoir deck like can't really beat Charizard. Especially with like Bibarel and lists now, like the one strategy they had was just kill your Pidgeot and then Ionu you and then kill Charizard the next turn. And you probably won't find Vacuum if all those are dying, but with Bibarel in play, like they're not missing Vacuum. And then against like Chen Pao, it's a terrible matchup. Ancient Box, also a bad matchup. I think the Roaring Moon did Unsparce deck is maybe more fine, but it's still probably not great either. Like Tina, the matchup seems close. Like if the Klefki plus Fluttermane like sticks them early, then you're probably good. But they've got Abyss Seeking, so if they can turn one Abyss Seeking, the matchup's not too great. And then I think like there's going to be more Lost Vacuums in decks now, like even Chen Pao. If the matchup wasn't already bad enough, Chen Pao now playing Lost Vacuum to beat the Heroescapes and Zard. I'm not a fan of Gardevoir at all. It's like it's a very high rolly deck, I feel like when I'm trying it. Like your draw engine is just not that good. Like Refinement is a good ability, but it's not enough, I don't think. Like Shining Arcana was really what your draw engine was. You draw two with Curlia and then draw two more with Arcana and then you have enough. But with only the four refinements and they're like weak 80 HP Pokemon, it's just not good in my opinion.
All right, makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's. I think it's still going to see some decent success going forward, but for how long, I guess, is kind of like what you're saying. Just depends on how long people take to catch on. Maybe people already have caught on to a lot of the general idea of how to play, especially the Zard players. So we'll see how that goes. Next I talk about is another one that just keeps popping up in top eights. I got top eight at Perth and at Sao Paulo, and actually showed up in really strong numbers in day two in Sao Paulo is Lugia. Probably combination of things like good Zard matchup, but hands numbers kind of dying down a little bit helps it out. Andrew, you're the Lugia expert of days past. What are your thoughts on Lugia right now?
I don't think the deck's in a horrible spot. I would definitely play it before some of the other decks we've discussed today. I think like it's a deck that can beat Charizard, right? Like if you have to use your summoning star at the right time, set up some Chinchinos, make sure they can't kill your Archaops before you're setting up Chinchinos. But like you do actually have a playable Zard matchup, which is better than a lot of decks in the format can say. And I feel like the deck's actually more consistent than I expected it to be this format. I feel like you can still actually pretty reasonably get out the turn two Archaops plays this format. But the deck definitely still has some issues. It's still not the most consistent deck ever. And it feels like there's a lot that can go wrong. Like even like you it's not always the easiest to even ch chain like the Cincinos at the end of the game. So sometimes you just randomly miss a piece and then your whole deck falls apart. You can't get to the board state you want. But I do think it's like better than I thought it would be, and it's more consistent than I thought it would be. So it's definitely still a decent deck and not a deck that you should completely write off in the format.
Not a huge Lugia fan in this format. I was a big Lugia lover when we had the other stuff. But I will say, to piggyback off what Andrew said, that it's like in a spot that Tina is, where you're a deck that is okay going up against control and going up against Charizard, which is like something that basically not a lot of, like maybe three decks say they want to do. So there's a big advantage in that. Is that you have the matchup spread where two of the most powerful decks you're kind of okay playing into if you set up. Setting up is where I have the problem with it. I just wish we had more ball cards. My buddy Finn, who does not play anymore, he's retired, had this idea earlier this season when Colas Lugia won in San Diego that we would play Arcanine as a fifth out to Archaeops. And I actually don't, I actually am not, I think it would be decent right now when we're having so many hard times finding Archaeops that it would be worth having the fifth out. And for those who don't know, Archaeops is an evolved Pokemon, so you can summon Arcanine and then on the following turn evolve it into Archaeops once it's been in play. It's not like a foolproof thing, but it is something that would just give you an extra out to finding Archaeops, so that you don't have to summoning star for one single Archaeops. You can single or you can summoning star for the Arcanine too. So maybe worth trying. I'm not sure. I'm just not big up on Lugia at the moment, personally.
If you are playing the Arcanine, you can also might as well slot in one fossil there, so you can set up a third
I will co-sign the fossil.
Three Arcanines are broken.
So broken.
Like the Arcanine,
That was
yeah. No, I think the Arcanine like doesn't really work against Charizard too much, because like the matchup is really just can Zard, like after you put your two Archaeops in play, does Zard knock out one of your Archaeops before you set up like two Chinchinos? And if you can't use Primal Turbo that turn, like you're better off not summoning starring, because you really need to be doing double. If you're playing the fossil though, then it's fine because you can you have a third yeah or something. Yeah, to play Rare Candy too. Yeah, why don't we just play, like, at this point, why are we even playing Lugia in the deck?
We'll
Why
just
don't we
play
just
your deck.
play,
We'll just play a Mew Archaeops or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You actually have
I
to
need to
against
play
Charizard.
Amistar. Amistar.
Like,
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
you should not be using summoning star until you can do a couple Primal Turbos to a Cincino against Zard. You have some time in that matchup, but if you're letting them pick off your Archaeops before you power Cincinos, you're not going to be winning. So, but if you do time
And
it right,
that's I
you
feel like
know,
it's a huge Yeah, I feel like that's a huge mistake for most Lugia players that they just are like, all right, I'm just summoning Archeops for no reason, and I don't need, I'm just attacking with Lugia when I just simply attach twice to Lugia or whatever, read the wind, attach again. You know, you can kind of, if you're not taking prizes super quickly, you're not in threat of dying or getting knocked out, excuse me. So I feel like that's a mistake that a lot of Lugia players make. They're just like, got my Archeops, it's time to set them up.
Yeah, I haven't tested that much, but I thought about like from Lugia's side, if it's like maybe even a good thing to like just manually power up Lugia and like refuse to summoning star and then force them to take like two prize cards off the Lugia. Ideally, like you get a couple Tempest Dives off or something, but force them to take two prizes and then use summoning star, kill with Chinchino, and then their counter catchers don't work. So they only have boss. Like then you go like Iona to four and then turn off their counter catchers. And if they can't find boss Archeops, then you should win the game from there. So like it might be even better just giving them prize cards, or you can just like start manually attaching to Chinchinos on the, or Minchinos on the bench. Just like have a Lugia active, start manually attaching to them. And then get ahead enough on attachments to where like even if they kill an Archeops, it's fine. Because you just want to burn their gust effects. Because if they start killing your Chinchino, your Minchinos, then they're gonna miss the KO on the Archeops. And like disabling their counter catchers sounds pretty good to me as well. It's something to try maybe. I haven't played a single game with Lugia, so I don't know. But
if you just take two with Cincino and they boss around it on an Archeops, I feel like you're already too far ahead. If you could just take two more with Cincino while powering up a Lugia, I feel like they're probably too far behind from that. But I don't know. I feel like they can't really afford to boss the Archeops if you have a fully powered up Cincino. But I don't know.
I think by just turn two to three, if you have double Min or one Cincino and another Mincino benched, and you have your Archeops up, I think you're winning those games. The problem is that sometimes you're not getting to that point of the game.
It does you're that more than I expected it to, but it's definitely not every game.
Yeah. All right. So next up then, I wanted to just go into Indianapolis then, because we're starting to run out of time here. I just wanted to quickly go over kind of decks we expect to increase and decrease in popularity, kind of given how now that all these events, the last three events have happened, a lot of the time we were saying for Orlando, a lot of people kind of locked into lists early and weren't really like super reactive to what happened at UIC, maybe a little reactive, like slight changes maybe to their deck, but actual archetype they're probably locked in general. But now there's a lot more time between say Orlando and Indianapolis, or even Perth or South Hollow to Indianapolis. So now that there's kind of more of a gap, we can probably see more kind of reactions in the meta. And just in general, what decks we see to kind of jump up substantially or decrease substantially. I'll say I think Hands still seems to be on some kind of downslide. I think that still will probably be the case, will probably be less popular than it was at EUIC. That's like the first thing that comes to mind. I think Zard is still going to be the same, maybe even more, maybe closer to 25, like Jake was saying earlier. But yeah, any other decks y'all want to mention?
I think Tina probably goes up a bit, just because people are starting to settle in that the and Lost Box in general, just Comfy Engines in general, I think are going to keep steadily going up as people realize that they're strong and that Charizard sometimes doesn't tech for them, depending on the list. I think now that we've had a couple of tournaments that the control doesn't feel as hated out, and I feel like the better Pidgeot control players will probably come out of the woodworks for Indiana, because it feels like it just has not performed at all or been played really as much as it was at EUIC. And when it was played a bunch, it seemed to do well, and it's kind of gone down. So I feel like the heat off of control has kind of been given a rest now that Charizard's won three times. The heat of it. So I think Pidgeot control is, I don't think it's going to be big percent, but I do think it's a deck that is well positioned once people forget about it.
Yeah, even
I think personally, I think the Chen Pao usage is going to go down. People got to realize the deck's not good, and that'll go down quite a bit. But that's just my personal opinion on that one. But like the other decks are all kind of middled out and will stay where they are percentage wise. Maybe some more Roaring Moon, maybe that one goes up a little more as like the better turbo deck than Iron Hands. I personally think it's the better turbo deck, and I'm not hating on Iron Hands. I think it's got its merits, but I think maybe that one will go up a little bit. Otherwise, I think everything will stay the same. Charizard will be 20%. Gen Pal will be 10, Lugia will be 8, Gardevoir will be less than 8. You know, everything's going to middle around Charizard being at the top.
Yeah.
I agree. I also think Giratina will probably go up. Now, from different people, I've heard conflicting opinions on the Giratina versus Charizard matchup, but I think generally it has a pretty decent chance against the deck. And so it was a deck that was pretty popular last format, and as Charizard keeps getting more popular and, like, you know, people are like, I need to have a way to beat Charizard. Giratina definitely has a way to beat Charizard. It has a chance in most matchups, and I think that will be a deck that definitely goes up, like Hunter said.
Do you think so, even with the anti-Tina Zardless winning Sao Paulo? Will that scare people away from it at all, or do you think it won't matter?
I don't feel like most people will copy that list in America. I feel like people will be more looking at the Orlando list, the Torch style list.
Yeah.
I feel like the Latin results don't always transfer to American regionals.
They don't. And the other thing I'll say too is that the cards that Charizard right now is playing for Tina are cards that, like, Tina can easily prepare for. Like, if Tina just has a loss vacuum, then the Hero's Cape or whatever is not a big deal. And I think Azul's group has been playing Sinnoh. I'm not really familiar with their list, but you kind of have stuff to do with the Mist already. It's just about finding it on the right turn. So
yeah.
I think the cards are already in both lists to have, like, back and forth gameplay, which to me makes it feel like a 50-50 matchup, maybe slightly towards Tina or Charizard, depending on lists on both ends. But it feels like a 50-50 to me with the type of text that they both have for each other.
Giratina can also
overall are like that.
I was going to say, like, they can kill the Pidgeot fairly easy, which denies a lot of times finding the different tech cards, right?
Yeah.
You can't always afford to get Miss Energy at the beginning of the game, and then they can go kill the Pidgeot, and you're not always going to have the easiest access to it.
Yeah,
I think, like, the Hero's Cape, like, on the Pidgeot is actually, like, kind of more important than on the Charizard sometimes. Yeah, just to avoid that one shot. But, yeah, as far as my thoughts, like, for the format in general, it's kind of at the point where I think the percentages, like, don't matter all that much. Like, your deck you should care about Charizard twice as much as every other deck, but then every other deck, like, just care about equally as much. Because we're talking about, like, a 1% difference in play rate between, like, a lot of these decks. Like, the range between, like, the playable decks and the, like, the top end of the playable decks and the low end is, like, going to be, like, 3% at most. So, like, yeah, it really doesn't matter, like, what the actual percentages are. You should just care about Charizard twice as much as any other deck, and then play from that. Because, this is, like, a really weird format where there's, like, it seems like there's a big drop-off from Charizard to the next deck, and then all the meta decks, and then everything else below that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I was going to mention earlier when Hunter was mentioning control stuff, I guess Block Lax is making a little bit of a comeback, too. There are more Block Laxes in Day 2 of Sao Paulo than Pidgeot controls. That might be something where people kind of lean more towards going back to that again, too. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it plays really well there.
I'll say it. I think playing Pidgeot control does take a fair amount of skill and practice with the deck and knowing your spots, whereas, like, Block Lax is kind of just, like, dead a bit. So I think it's a harder deck to do well with. And I think Block Lax doesn't have, like, a fragile setup like Pidgeot does.
For sure. Cool. Okay. Last thing to do before we get on with the bonus part of the episode for the Patreon is questions from Twitter. Quick first one, waffles or pancakes? One word each. Pancakes for me.
Pancakes for me, but they're harder to make. So sometimes, like, waffles are easier.
Dude, waffle makers at hotels while you're going for regionals and stuff, top tier, big fan.
Waffles clear.
Hunter?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm from the South. Waffles is the 100% right answer.
Chicken and waffles, pretty good, yeah. Talked about Zard earlier. It seems like if we're going to say, like, Bob McDoodle is asking on Twitter. Also, that question was from DJ Cirque. For Bob McDougal asking, which version of Zard is the best? It kind of sounds like we're generally leaning towards, like, toward Liam-type build. Is that fair from us, from everybody here? cool. And then is it even worth it to play Turbo Hands now that Zard has won 3 regionals and an IC in this format?
I've actually been convinced by a very good player that I respect that there is a line that the Hands deck can do versus Charizard. And when they explained it to me, it made sense. Seems like a little hard to pull off. But I actually think there is a line in a Charizard, although I don't know that it makes your matchup favorable. I think it's just possible. So I won't hate on the Hands deck. I do think there is a reason to play it. I would just be, my thing with playing Hands now would be how many decks are going to start playing Vacuum, because Vacuum's the real tech card that that deck's worried about, and not fighting Pokemon or Charizard or whatever. It's decks that have Vacuum is the problem.
Yeah, I agree. I also don't think the Charizard matchup is completely unplayable. I just don't think the deck is very good in general. So I would say I would more avoid it just because, like, the deck seems so linear. It doesn't even always do what it wants to do. I feel like it should have at least, like, always get the turn one Miratum, but it doesn't even always do that. And it feels, like, so limited, and it feels like if your opponent has, like, any thing that they can do at all, your deck just, like, loses. If they can respond at the beginning with it, like, a Vacuum knockout, your deck kind of just loses. So to me, it feels like I wouldn't play the deck in general, but I don't think the Zard matchup is like 100% the reason why I wouldn't play.
True.
Yeah, like I don't even think the Zard matchup's like that bad for Hands. Like, it's maybe like 40-60 at worst. I think it's even like closer to 45-55 maybe. Because like if Charizard just misses for a turn, like you're down 3 prize cards, and as long as they draw out of Iono with like Mew EX in play or something, then they're gonna win. So yeah, it's not even that bad of a matchup, but yeah, like Hunter said, there's going to be Vacuums and everything. So, I would never play Hands deck, either way, but yeah, more Vacuums in it in the format is not good for it.
Mm-hmm. Other reasons to not play Hands, but it's not your Charizard matchup.
Yeah, the Charizard decks are slower now too, which is actually good for Hands, although the decks don't have that good.
Makes sense. Last question from Anthony Maxwell: is CPOW consistent enough for an 8-round senior regional? I think, Hunter, you hate Chen Pao. Why do you hate Chen Pao?
I wrote a lot of articles about Chen Pao. I think that for 8 rounds, yes, for 8 rounds. Okay. Yeah. 8 rounds sounds good. We go to 9, that's where we start having problems.
The problem with seniors, though, you have to go like 6-1-1, so you can't even take that like extra loss. So I think it might be even worse if you're playing in a seniors regional. But I don't actually think the deck is that inconsistent.
Yeah.
I think it sets up now, especially with Poffin. Like, it's, I don't know, whenever I play against Chen Pao, they set up. So I haven't encountered like the bricks. It's mostly just people like throwing with the deck. The deck is very, very hard to not throw with.
Yeah.
So if you're very, very confident you can play this deck to like 99% efficiency, then I'd say play it. I think the matchup is favorable for the Charizard matchup is favorable for Chen Pao. As long as, like, if you have the Vacuum for the Hero's Cape especially. So I think if you can play Chen Pao to like 95% plus efficiency, and play Chen Pao. If you're below 95%, never touch the deck, because you're not gonna hit what you need. Because yeah, like, you're just managing like you have to make sure your both the barrels like don't die, and you have to use like all, in addition to all the sequencing stuff. Like, I've seen so many players, like, I play a collapsed with Charizard against them, and they discard one of their barrels, and I just counter catcher the other one, and they lose. So yeah,
I mean, you can't teach that one, all right? That's a skill we can't teach. You know,
I was gonna say the same thing. I think the most important thing is, like, I think it plays the most uniquely compared to any other deck. It's not really a deck you could play without having practiced all of the different sequencing things. So I would say, if you are an expert at the deck, then yeah, it will be consistent enough to play. But if you're not an expert at the deck, I would not play it. For me, when I tried to play it, I just did not understand it. To be fair,
my gripes aren't with setting up. They're with the mid game and stuff. Even if I'm properly sequencing, sometimes me and my roommate have this joke where we're like, if we just sequence wrong, we would have hit the cards we needed. So my roommate has played Chen Pao to all these events and basically been one win off. And he's like, every tournament, especially EUIC, he literally walked this to me and was like, man, if I would have just sequenced wrong, then I would have hit all three items on Pokestop and we would have been fine. It would have been no problem. But because I did it the right way, you know, because I shivery chilled at the right moment, then I look at my deck and go, man, those are three item cards I wanted, you know? So then your Iridus. Then Pokestop triple Iridus. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, man, dude, if I could just be so lucky that I just do it wrong and make it work, then we're okay. But I think Chen Bao is a good deck, just not what I would be leading. I turn it on.
I also think like Chen Bao players in general, they use the stop way too much. Like there's a stop is in the deck for a reason.
We already have the Bazingas for turn. Yeah, I need more cards.
If it's glowing, you have to click Iridus. It. Come on.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, you're what?
Yeah. Why are we here? Every time I see a Chen power player just like stopping when they already have everything, I'm like, please, you're gonna hit something at some point. And then they always get mad when they hit Iridus. And then I'm like, why did you do it?
Or the classic, let me super rod these Pokemon energy. And I'm gonna search the energy with Chen Pao, and then I'm gonna rip stop. Oh, there went the Pokemon rod back in. Yep, that worked out.
Yeah. Along those lines, I actually think people use their opponent's Pokestop not enough, especially against Chen Pao. Like a deck that's really fast and can outspeed you, I think you should be spinning their stop a lot of times if you don't have the perfect hand to respond to what they're going to do. You don't need all your resources against Chen Pao. You just need to go fast to make sure you can respond to them. So I end up using my Chen Pao's opponent's Pokestop very often when I'm playing against them.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially like I'm playing Charizard too, like, and I don't have Candy Charizard. My opponent just gives me a stop for free. They already had everything, already had the double Poffins, and they just give me a stop for free, and I hit Candy Zard now, so...
Especially with stuff like the double rod and the pal pad. If you discard supporters or Pokemon, you could just get them back. So yeah.
And the game is so short against Chen Pao that you don't need any resources. Like you can play with half your Charizard deck and then you're still going to have the same game.
Yeah.
You just need to not get too far behind.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So our 151 ETB winner of the giveaway is going to be Christopher Vester. So thank you for subscribing to the Dead Drug Gaming YouTube channel. If you're not already subscribed, please, please do so. We're trying to get to 1,000 subs before NAIC. That's coming up really fast. So please subscribe. We have a lot of cool content coming up soon. I recorded like 4 hours of tabletop content with Jake. That'll be going up very soon. We covered the Charizard Mirror first, and it's one of the most wackiest games of Pokemon I've ever played. So I'm really excited for everyone to see that. And then some other different content coming up soon as well. And then any shout outs people want to do. So let's start with Hunter. Any shout outs?
Nope. Shout out Cutter Tap. Go check out the articles. Keep supporting Team DDG. I'm old. This will probably be my last season. So I'm glad I got another invite under my belt. And we're just going to spin Hawaii and see what happens.
Dude, not the retirement announcement podcast. No, dude.
I'm going to be honest. It probably is. This is my 16th or 17th year. I've been playing a long time.
Yeah. You're going to see the megas that they drop at Worlds and then come back because they look good.
I will tell you, the only reason I played this season, because last season was supposed to be my last one, was because they announced Hawaii. And in 2011 was Hawaii also? It was 2011 and 2012. 2011, I got my invite as a senior, but my grandparents did not have the money to send me. So I just didn't go. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get my redemption and be able to, now that I'm an adult and I can afford to make stuff like that happen. And I ended up getting my invite. So now I have my redemption. So I don't know if I need too much else, but we'll see where it goes.
Sounds good. Jake, any shout outs?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow me on Twitter. You know where to find me. shout out to Dead Drug Gaming. This podcast and the tabletop videos have been very fun to record. The Charizard Mirror that we just did especially was wacky. We thought it was a stalemate for like 10 minutes, and we're just talking through how to break it. It was very fun.
Andrew?
Yeah, and you can follow me on Twitter at PokeHawkeye. And go subscribe to Cutter Tap.
Yeah, shout out Cutter Tap. Shout out Dual Spec Gaming for sponsoring the team. You can find me on Twitter at EtchyOK. And then I stream on Twitch a lot, twitch.tv/Etchy. We're going to be jumping into a Patreon bonus episode. We're going to record that right now. So if you're interested in seeing that, it'll be on the Patreon, which will be in the description below. We're going to be talking about testing and effective testing/practice. So if that's a topic you're interested in, definitely check it out. And thank you so much for watching. I'm really glad with how these podcasts have been going. Really excited with the feedback we've been getting. If you have any feedback, please let us know. I would really appreciate it. I want to make these podcasts as helpful for you as possible. So thank you very much for watching. We'll see you next time.